And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And it is that time again to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. How are you?
I couldn't be better. Couldn't be better.
Weather's not supposed to be great, though, John.
No, I understand you have failed us once again.
Blame the mayor.
Everybody else does, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's that's part of the mayor's plan to end the drought.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, every week there's ups and downs for you and your staff, and that gives us something to talk about each week. Let's go back to the story that has been the headline, the congestion pricing commission being set up, 17 people on it. Is this going to satisfy Washington?
We'll know on or about the 8th of August. I hope that it does. You can make the case that we didn't do on time what the requirements were. You can make the case that this really doesn't authorize congestion pricing. It simply authorizes a study. On the other hand, they set the rules and they can change them. I think what you're seeing here is the U.S. Department of Transportation would love to have us do this because it's a demonstration for the rest of the country, and that's what these funds are for. They're looking for innovative demonstration projects that will give the rest of the country ideas and political cover to address the problem of congestion throughout this country. From our point of view, I would have preferred something earlier and different, but it's democracy, and we worked with the legislature, with the Senate, and with the Assembly, and with the governor, and this is what we came up with. It passed handily in both houses yesterday, and now we'll, to the extent we can, talk to Washington, and they don't, you know, they have to be careful because there are 9 cities competing for 5 slots that will receive funding. We have to work with them, and if we can, and explain how this really will lead to a plan that they should support. I think if they do give us money, we might get less than we would have otherwise. Maybe we'll get more. You never know how these things play out. But whatever monies we get, if it's enough, we would use it to improve mass transit and to pay for the technology needed to implement congestion pricing. And then congestion pricing would hopefully encourage people to leave their cars at home, but at the very least, it would generate a lot of money for mass transit. And that's the other thing that's playing out here, I think. We all know that we have to have more monies for mass transit. People are starting to talk about fare increases. We want to extend some of these subway lines and provide service in areas of the city where there aren't subways or buses now, and make the bus trip in, subway trips into the central city more pleasurable and quicker. And we need money to do all those things, and this is a ways to raise money.
Let me ask you about the fare increase. In the conversations this week, we've had questions from listeners about would any of these monies generated from the congestion pricing be used to keep the fares down?
Well, you know, money is fungible, and all of the monies that we raise from congestion pricing would go to support mass transit. Whether these go to keep the fares down or other monies go to keep the fares down. One of the MTA's big expenses, a very growing expense, is debt service. When they build something, they have to borrow money to build it today and then pay off the debt over the long period of time while you're using the facilities. And the debt service gets charged against the operating budget every single year. And this would do some of that. I think a lot of the question of how much of, if any, of a fare increase you need depends on assumptions which are very iffy. For example, if you go back a year or so, remember all of a sudden the MTA discovered this surplus that they didn't have?
And everybody, like $1 billion.
Right, everybody criticized them for it. Well, the state discovered it and the city discovered it all at the same time. And what we discovered was a real estate transaction boom in big pieces of property that nobody had predicted. And the MTA, along with the city, get some of the transaction taxes that we put on big real estate deals. And so, you know, it wasn't, it's criticizing him for it isn't really fair. Nobody foresaw the real estate market the way it was. Sadly, it looks to us like the real estate market is slowing down. Certainly it is elsewhere and probably starting to do so here. So it may be that some of the revenues that they had counted on won't be there. You don't know. Also, if more people leave their cars at home through congestion pricing and take the subway, you collect more from the strap hangers. If construction costs were to go down rather than up, it would cost you less money to build the Second Avenue subway and the train to the plane and the number seven line extension. So there's just a lot of assumptions built here, and it's a little bit early to know whether or not they'll need a fare increase in short term and how much that should be. Part of it is congestion pricing. If congestion pricing doesn't get implemented, or because it's not funded by the federal government, and it probably wouldn't in that case, or doesn't get implemented because the legislature in the end doesn't agree to do so, then they'd have to find other sources of revenues, and that means taxes or strap hangers paying.
Well, you know, one of the things they mentioned in the MTA fare increase, subway fare increase, was they were floating the idea of an automatic upgrade every 2 years of that fare. And for exactly what you just said, I think that that's a sort of a bad idea.
You can argue it's a bad idea. On the other hand, you know, the MTA was created so that the elected officials wouldn't have to answer to the public why they have to raise fares or why the service isn't good. So they created the state agency and said, here, you guys do it. Of course, then everybody yells at the governor and the mayor, you should stop them from giving a fare increase. If you remember how we handled the hospital closing or base closing commission at the federal level, getting it out of politics, there is something to be said for that. And if you had an automatic fare increase that was tied to the cost of living, I guess, you know, it's hard to argue that their costs aren't going to match the cost of living roughly. And so that just gets that part of it out of politics. And then if we want to do new things, somebody's got to pay for it. I've always thought, you know, in this country, elected officials are afraid to stand up and say, okay, you want something? Great. Now, either we're going to have to raise taxes to pay for it, or fees or fines or something, or we're going to stop doing something else and pay for it. But there's no magical pot of money that just appears, and yet elected officials, when they campaign, always promise things and never bring up the subject.
All right, let me take a break right here, Mr. Mayor. Sit tight. We'll get right back to you in a second at 77 WABC. Friday. This is the John Gambling Show. That means it's time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We continue. We were talking about transportation. Your reaction to the cabbies threatening to strike September 1?
Well, I hope that cooler minds prevail. The truth of the matter is we have had two fare increases in the last year or so with an agreement that they would install this equipment. And they've been getting the money that we promised in the meantime, and they were supposed to be selecting, and we're helping select, and then they were going to install it. And we're not going to walk away from it, and hopefully they'll stop yelling and screaming and do what they had committed to do. Keep in mind, this is in the cab driver's interest. The information that the GPS provides is nothing different than they're required to fill out on a form that they submit to the Taxi and Limousine Commission. And the fact that you can use a credit card to pay your taxi bill, all the studies show that when people use credit cards, they tend to tip much greater than when they pay cash. That's true in restaurants and true other places where they have these meters with a credit card reader. So it's in the cab driver's interest, I think. But whether they see it that way or not, they made an agreement and they've been collecting the money, and they're going to have to do it.
All right.
And in the meantime, incidentally, yeah, our Taxi and Limousine Commission is working on a plan just in case they strike, and we'll be well prepared. And the people of the city will, you know, they'll figure out a ways to do it.
It'll reduce congestion.
It would reduce congestion and pollution, not in the ways I'd like. But
I understand. The stories keep coming back, and this one has popped up again. Cell phones in school. City council wants a law. I don't know why you need a law, but a law that says that the kids can carry them to school.
There's never been any reason why they couldn't carry them to school. We don't have jurisdiction over that. The administration, however, does run the school system, and we have jurisdiction of what goes on inside the schools, and we have a rule against PDAs and cell phones and iPods and those kinds of devices in the school, and that's going to stay in effect. You know, I was down at in St. Louis the other day and gave a speech at the Urban League, and when I talked about one of the things we've done is ban cell phones in the schools, I got a standing ovation.
Well, it is a problem for everybody in school, and of course the problem is how do the schools control it once the kids get there. At the moment, how is it handled? I mean, it's an outright ban, but the kids, if they have it in their pocket and it doesn't go off, that's
not
an issue.
You know, in
is
some
it?
Places we have magnetometers in the impact schools.
And you take them.
Sure. In others, you'd hope that the parents understand that schools are for learning and that these things are great. Technology is wonderful. But if the kids have it in their pocket, they're going to text message and go on the internet to the teenage sites, and sadly, a handful of kids cheat in tests using these devices. Parents should understand that it's the most important thing for their kids is to get a good education, and these devices really get in the way from that. And our teachers, who are the greatest teachers in the world, we've got 80,000 teachers who are just spectacular. They're working hard. The results are unbelievable. Graduation rate's up 20%, math score's up 20%, reading score's up 10%. They've got enough to do. And they don't need to be there policing anything else. The parents have a responsibility, as do the kids here as well. Let's leave the electronic devices out of the classroom. And, you know, if you want to carry it in the street, that's your business.
You were quoted this week as saying, I think it was in St. Louis, when you were out there, that you feel that America is in dire straits. Is that a fair quote?
I think we talked about public education.
Okay.
Is in dire straits. Sure. 25 years ago, there was a big study saying if we didn't change public education, we'd fall further behind, and we've done next to nothing. And as a country, we've fallen further behind than over the last 25 years, and we were behind then. We have to do something about public education throughout this entire country. Our kids are going to live in a world that is global, is competitive. You know, the more technology you have, the easier it is to get your message out, but so is it easy for the other person. And so the old values, I've always argued, become more important with technology, the ability to read and write and do mathematics and to understand a question and know how to compose an answer and how to work collectively and collaboratively. And we've just got to do something for our kids. And I think that, sadly, this country has not done it. Now, in New York City, we've done it, but we have a long ways to go. Don't make any mistake about that.
All right. There is a story in this morning's New York Sun that says that members of the city council, principals union, teachers union, are meeting to talk about the school system after Michael Bloomberg, after control by the mayor, runs out in 2009. Your reaction?
Well, listen, a free country, First Amendment lets you talk about anything. You know, our job is to do the best we can with the school system between now and the end of our term, and we're focused on that. And you would hope that the public would look at what we've done and look at how little progress was made before and say mayoral control works and you should not involve the unions in management, and the parents' responsibility is to tell the schools what they think their kids need, and the parent coordinator can tell the parents what the school thinks the parent should do to help in the educational process. Remember, kids are only in school 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, half the year. So it's the parents that are providing a very big part of the child's education. But leave what goes on in the classroom to the teachers and to their managers, the principals. And it would be a sad day if any of that got rolled back. But, you know, all we can do is do the best job we can and show that this is working, and then democracy takes over.
A new poll shows exactly that, that many New Yorkers have finally come around after, you know, 3-4 years of the mayoral control and Joel Klein as chancellor, and they're saying, you know what, this thing seems to work.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say brag about it and say there's a pattern, but as I remember, there weren't that many people in favor of a smoking ban, although today it's popular. There weren't that many people in favor of a lot of these things. But if you do it right and you stick to your guns and you have consistency, which I think is so important. One of the problems in government is we're always changing back and forth. If you pick one thing and stuck with it and did it well, it probably doesn't matter in many cases which thing you picked. But we're doing that with the school system, and I think you're going to see a greater appreciation of all of the hard work of Dennis Walcott and Joel Klein, of the 120,000 employees of the Department of Education, whether the school safety officers or the custodians or the administrators or the principals or the teachers, APs. I mean, there's an awful lot of people that work very hard here, and collectively they deserve the credit. And they've just done a spectacular job, and they're going to keep doing it. And, you know, we've raised teacher salaries 43% in 5 years. We've raised principal salaries roughly the same amount. And they've cooperated by changing some of the antiquated rules that prevented the principals from managing the schools and hurt our recruiting efforts and in getting new teachers and getting new principals. Starting in September, there's going to be two things, John, that will dramatically change public education in New York City. One is we're going to issue a report card for every school. Every school gets graded A to F. And right now, how does a parent know that the school their kid goes to is a good school? Well, they ask the teacher, and the teacher says, yeah, this is a good school. Here, it's going to be an independent objective measure based on performance standards that everybody will understand. And if your kid goes to an A school, you should be very thankful. If your kid goes to an F school, you should be demanding changes. And I want to make sure there's a system so that nobody can walk away from that after we leave office, that you're going to know what you're getting. The other thing we're doing starting in September, which is dramatically different, is something called fair funding. We have in this city for decades funded some schools at $2,000 or $3,000 per capita more than other schools. And we all know which schools got the better schools got more money, and the poorer schools with the kids who were struggling and who maybe arguably needed more help, they got a lot less funding. But starting this September, every school is going to be funded the same per capita with some slight adjustments for special ed kids and English language learners and a couple of other minor things. But basically, for the first time in memory, you're going to have every school have the same resources, and it's going to be up to the principal as to how to spend those resources. The principal can decide, I want more teachers or more books or better this or something over there, because it's the principal working with their teachers that they supervise that know at a local level what would be best for their student body. And we've worked very hard over the last 4 years to get the best principals we possibly can and to train them and to provide development for the teachers so that the teachers have more skills than they've ever had before. And, it is really all coming together. But these two things will be a sea change in public education. And shame on everybody if we ever were to roll these back. And Klein and the whole 120,000 people in the Department of Ed deserve the credit here. And Dennis Walcott, who keeps fighting all the political battles.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on a second. Another break. Run a little long there, but we will be right back to you. And right here, let's go get the latest news. Get a business. We continue here on the John Gambling Show Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, to follow up on something we just kind of touched on a little bit, the future, that is, the unseen future. Ray Kelly's name has come up for possibly running for mayor, and you said that Ray's a great guy, which I couldn't agree more with. Is it fair to say that you would take an active role in whomever you decided to support?
Well, first, before I forget, you mentioned Ray. I'm going to have to leave at the next break. And we've got a ceremony over at One Police Plaza where Ray and I are going to promote Russell Timoshenko posthumously to detective first class. And the ceremony starts at 8, so I'm going to duck out about 10 minutes early on you and your listeners. Sorry about that.
Well, that's understandable, completely so. And I also want to talk some more about that in just a second here. But is it fair to say that you would play an active role in the next go-round?
Well, I think it's very early to take a look at that. Listen, Ray Kelly is a phenomenally competent guy. I think he's the best police commissioner we've ever had, and I think Ray could do anything. And I was asked the other day, did I think he should run? I said, you know, if he wants to run, he should. He should not. You'd never want to say I could have done it. Ray has never said to me that he wants to run. We've never discussed it. And I certainly will have that conversation with him and anybody else that wants to run down the road. But, you know, at the moment, everybody's focus is on the 08 election. And I think that's, I've said, I'm going to stay out of that because
you're talking about the presidential.
Yeah,
election?
I mean, for example, on the Republican side, both Rudy and John McCain endorse me. And whoever wins, I've got to work with them. Senator Clinton's been a great senator. I talk to her maybe every 2 weeks, and when she needs something, she calls, and I try to help, and vice versa. She's always been there. So, you know, I have nothing but good things to say about the job Rudy did. John McCain I've liked for a long time and think he's a great American, and Hillary has been a great senator. And I'll just stay out of that race. But that's the focus now on 08. And then after that, there clearly will be a focus on who will succeed us in this administration. And I think Ray would be a great mayor, and I think there are others who might want to run and might be good mayors as well. And, it's just too early, and I don't want anybody to read into this that I'm not a very big Ray Kelly supporter, because I am, but I just don't know that he has any interest in it.
But you obviously would get involved with whomever you decided to support, whoever might be running at the time.
Well, because I've got to work with everybody, I certainly will not get involved for a long period of time because the public needs this administration to focus on helping and staying out of politics. And only up near the end, into 09, would I then start thinking about publicly getting involved. And, you know, listen, I know probably everybody who has talked about running. I have my own views, and I'm going to keep those to myself. I'm going to continue to work with everybody because that's what the public needs.
All right, so having heard you just say about the national election in 2008, we shouldn't make anything of the website Mike2008.com?
Our staff takes care of all of those so somebody else doesn't buy them. In this day and age, every campaign, companies buy all the conceivable domain names that they can where somebody might use it to embarrass the company or create confusion as to what the company, whether it's the company or not. So that's just a normal thing that's done in this day and age.
All right. I'm sure you read the story in the Daily News this morning about this guy, Richard Norad, who is the Virginia gun dealer, who sold the gun that dropped Russell Tymoshenko.
Well, you know, listen, you talked about Ray Kelly. Ray has been as instrumental as anybody working with John Feinblatt and Ed Schuyler and the rest of the people here to put together this coalition of 245 mayors to try to stop these crazy gun dealers from selling guns to criminals. And it's, you know, it's like 1% of the gun dealers. And there's this federal law that hurts Ray and his people from proactively stopping guns getting sold to criminals. All Ray can do under the federal law in many cases is wait until a murder takes place and then go after him. That's kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Ray and I have together given eulogies so far for 9 police officers shot in the line of duty, all with illegal guns. In the last 5.5 years, and neither of us want to do any more. And, I'll be joining Ray, as I said, in a few minutes to honor one of those police officers.
Speaking of the police officers, you have another union contract in the file with the captains.
Longest contract in the history of city labor relations, 101 months. It's for the captains. Union, but they also represent deputy inspectors, and deputy chiefs, and surgeons, of which the police department has 32. And it's a great contract for them. It's a great contract for the city. It will recognize the value that they have to this city. That's the top management of our police department that's done this spectacular job.
How many captains are there? Do you know?
About 700, as I remember, some number like that.
Right.
But, you know, under Ray's direction, they have continued to bring crime down. The murder rate continues to fall in this city, and it's going up in the rest of the country. You know, in previous years, murder rate came down here, was going down elsewhere as well. Now, sadly, the trend has changed in the country, but we've continued to keep it coming down here. And the men and women of the police department, led by these guys and the lieutenants and the sergeants, have really done a job, and they deserve to get well paid. And also now the city, between this and the sergeant's contract and the sanitation contract, we really have set the standards for future labor contracts. This one goes up into the year 2012, and I've always thought that one of the great things we could leave to our successors would be labor peace and specificity, so that a new administration didn't have to rush in and all of a sudden face a labor crisis or negotiations where they didn't know necessarily what was in the best interest of the city. And that wouldn't be good for the unions and their members, and it wouldn't be good for the city either. So this really will sort of, I think, set the pattern.
You're an intrepid leader, fearful of little. In fact, I think one thing that was announced this week is that you were going to have a customer satisfaction survey of New Yorkers. You are a brave individual.
Well, you know, if you're not willing to take the heat, or maybe just a little bit arrogant and think they'll be happy. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. You know, some people be happy, some won't. But yet, John, I think one of the things that is important in the city, there's a maturity in this city where we can address problems that before were not politically correct to address. We can ask questions and look at how well we're doing in a ways we were afraid before. It's a sign of maturity, and it sets the stage for really helping people and making things better. Because unless you can identify the problems and confront them, you can't do anything. In the past, people were afraid. And if there's one lesson I hope the country gets out of, or the city gets out of our administration, is that, you know, the public seems to like the fact that we're willing to take on the hard causes and be willing to admit when we are wrong, and be willing to admit when we make a mistake. And I think that's just so important in government.
Interesting, real fast before I know you got to scoot, the Quinnipiac poll of this week that showed that 53 to 48, something like that. That doesn't really work, 57%. Are against congestion pricing, but it goes the other way. It goes positive if those numbers go to keep the fares down. But the point is, people are willing to change their mind when they think about these issues, too.
John, I think that's as the ultimate. You have a perfect example of what's wrong with polls. If I ask a question, would you like to pay more and get nothing for it? You know how the answer is going to come out. If I say, would you like to pay more, and here's what you get, something you want, and you can't get it any other way, all of a sudden you get a different answer. So poll results always have to be looked at in the context of what was the specific question, who did you ask it to, when did you ask it. If you call them at 3 in the morning and ask them, you'll get very different answers than if you call, you know, at 3 in the afternoon. And people in this city are a lot smarter, I think, than they are given credit for by the Fourth Estate and by the political establishment. The public knows there's no free lunch. The public knows that they are part of the solution and that they have to work hard. They just want to make sure that the deck isn't stacked against them and that the other person's working hard and paying their fair share, and I couldn't agree more.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we will let you go. We'll talk next Friday. Have yourself a good week.
Looking forward to it. A little bit sad where I'm going, but a nice thing to do for the family. Just a reminder, there are a lot of men and women who put their lives on the line for us overseas and on the streets of this city.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. Good to talk to you,
Come
as back. Always. Right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77. 77-